3 weeks after Sheriff Stout's first visit, the lawman made good on his promise and delivered Stormy and Wolf out to the Bergen place. When he saw Frank come out to meet him, hobbling on the cedar crutch, the sheriff cocked back his hat and folded his hands across his saddle horn.
Well, I'll be. I leave for a day or two and come back to find you running around like a jackrabbit.
Told you I'd surprise you.
Frank grinned. He knelt down slowly to rub a delighted Wolf behind his ears.
I figure I'll be off the crutch in another week. Moving slow, but on my own.
Stout dismounted and ground-tied his gelding. He held on to Stormy's lead rope.
We'll go put your horse in Sam's corral if you feel like a short stroll. I'd like to talk to you for a minute.
Sure thing.
Frank had walked the short, sandy path to the pole corral a dozen times that day. One more would do him some good. He found he only needed the crutch about half the time, and he used it more to rest than to walk. After he turned Stormy out and pitched him a flake of hay, Stout turned to face Frank.
Morgan, you're getting better. That's plain to see. What are your plans after you mend?
I suspect you know, Sheriff, or you wouldn't have bothered to ask just yet.
Frank, listen to me. I've been hearing stories about you since I was a sprout. You're the fastest gun I ever even heard of. But you're hurt and weak. You know as well as I do that the law will catch up with Swan sooner or later. There's no use for you to get killed in the meantime.
There's no law in no man's land. It's a code I live by, Stout. The same code that'd make you hunt a man to the ends of the earth if he killed one of your deputies.
But that's the law. It's different.
No, it ain't. I appreciate you bringing out my animals.
That's a fearsome dog. He almost bit my hand off till I mentioned your name. I suppose I'd best be going.
Sheriff, I wonder if you could do me one more favor.
You bet.
Frank leaned on his crutch and took a sheet of paper and pencil out of his shirt pocket. He licked the tip of the pencil, scribbled out a note, then handed it to the sheriff.
Not a problem. I'll take care of this as soon as I get into town. You're a good man, Morgan. No matter what those boys from the east write about you.
Not too good.
Frank's strength came back slower than he wished, but it did return. He began to extend his walks further out into the hills and canyons surrounding Sam and Abby's place. When he wasn't walking, he spent a good deal of his time at Dixie's grave, talking to her. He told her of his plan to go after Swan. He knew she'd be against it, but it didn't matter. He thought she should be in on the planning. Once he was able to dispense with the crutch, Frank began to build a stone fence around the grave. He started by gathering up all the loose sandstone blocks he could find within easy walking distance. The weather was warm, and it felt good to work and sweat with his shirt off. When all the stones of appropriate size were gathered, Frank borrowed a hammer and chisel from Sam and quarried more from the large sandstone cliffs near the grave. The white scars on his arm and side were drawn and tight, but it felt good to stretch them. It felt good to build something for Dixie. Frank spent 3 weeks working on the wall. Sometimes he worked for hours on a single stone to get it to fit just right and lock in with all the others. He'd always been good with his hands, but he wanted this to be perfect. He had never been the type of man to cry, but after all the weeks of building and healing, when he finally laid the last stone on top of the 3-foot-high wall and erected the slab marker he'd carved himself, he sat down on the ground beside his wife's grave, put his face in his hands, and wept. Walking without a crutch was all well and good, but shooting was another thing altogether. Frank strapped on his Colt again for the first time 6 weeks after the ambush. Sam was kind enough to provide a half dozen whiskey bottles, and Frank set them up against a sandy hill a quarter mile away from the house. His arm had tightened from the scar tissue, and he felt awkward at first just drawing the heavy gun from the holster. Frank's hand didn't react like he needed it to. An action that had once been pure instinct now had to be relearned, step by slow, plodding step. Frank knew how to shoot. His history was enough to prove that. But knowing how to shoot and making your body do it were two different things. The first 6 shots kicked up sand around the bottles, Frank emptied the pistol and tried again. This time, he hit two of the bottles, but he was painfully slow, and he knew if bottles could shoot back, he would have been in trouble. After 12 depressing rounds, Frank decided to work on form and speed to keep from wasting bullets. Draw, thumb, squeeze, click. Reholster and repeat the process. Frank practiced hundreds of times until his arm and shoulder ached and his thumb was raw from cocking the hammer. By the time coyotes began to howl at a crescent moon, he was weak as a newborn babe and had to limp back to the house. Sam and Abby never asked him how things were going, but there was a constant supply of rich stew and plentiful readings from the Word. After a week of practice, Frank finally began to feel like his old self. Fall had come to the Colorado foothills, and the crisp air put him in the mind for a hunt. He broke all 6 bottles on his first try and slid the Colt easily back into his holster. There was definitely a new chill in the air. After almost 3 months, he was finally ready. Ephraim Swan might not know it yet, but his time had come.
You done what?
Sam scratched the top of his gray head as if Frank was speaking another language.
Sheriff Stout took care of all the paperwork at the bank in town. There's $10,000 there in an account under your name. A fellow I know put that amount as a bounty on my head. I figure you folks saved my life, so you earned at least that much.
Sam opened his mouth to speak, but nothing came out. Frank put up his hand.
You've treated me like I was kin. I can never repay you for that. Sam, you're getting too old to be scratching around in that dark old mine. Come out and see the world while you and Abby are still spry enough to enjoy it.
I feel like you are my kin. Oh, you don't owe us nothing, Frank. A good turn is its own reward.
Frank knew the goodbyes would be hard, and he'd had Stormy and a pack horse saddled and ready before the Bergens knew he was about to leave.
Please take this money with my thanks. As long as you're able, I'd appreciate it if you'd look after Dixie's grave.
The couple stood arm in arm and waved as Frank climbed aboard Stormy and turned to leave. When he looked back, he saw that even old Sam had started to cry.
I'll come back and look in on you when I can.
There was frost on the ground, and Wolf whined to get on the trail. All the emotion in the air was getting to the poor animal.
You do that, son. Oh, God, go with you.
Frank rode away slowly. Before he was out of earshot, he heard Abby say to Sam,
You know what I want to buy first? A new Bible.
Frank provisioned in Manitou Springs. He bought 45s for his Colt and several boxes of 44-40s for his rifle. He still had a sack full of buckshot. Sheriff Stout walked up just as Frank finished throwing his diamond hitch and tucking the edges of tarp around his top load on the pack horse.
I guess you healed up enough to go on and get yourself killed. On the revenge trail now, eh, Morgan?
Call it what you like. Swan's not about to answer to the law anytime soon. He may as well answer to me.
From what I hear, he's got upwards of 50 men working for him. That's an army where I come from.
You know how to eat an elephant, Sheriff?
Frank caught the stirrup in his hand and brought it to his boot toe. His muscles were still a little tight in his legs and back. And it took some effort to get in the saddle.
No, Frank, I don't reckon I do. How do you eat an elephant?
On his horse, Frank leaned down and stuck out his hand to shake with the sheriff.
One bite at a time, John. One bite at a time.
Frank headed east, intending to work his way south as he went. He made up all kinds of reasons why he should take this more out-of-the-way route. He needed a little more time to heal, more time in the saddle to harden him for what was ahead. But the truth was, he wanted to steer clear of anything and any place that brought to mind his time with Dixie. 30 miles out of Manitou Springs, he stopped at a small spring to take off his coat and get a drink. When he bent to refill his canteen, Frank managed to surprise a large rattlesnake who curled up on a stone to sun itself. Instinctively, Frank whipped the Colt from his holster and snapped a quick shot at the snake. He was far enough away that he was in no danger from the reptile's venom, but he was close enough that his blood ran cold. Not from fear of the viper, but because he'd missed. If he'd access to a mirror, which he didn't, even Frank wouldn't have been able to recognize himself. Abby Bergen's mutton stew was rich enough, but the nagging pain from his wounds and the anger he felt over Dixie's murder churned constantly in his stomach and had worked to keep his appetite small. Though he was a powerful man, he'd never been on the heavy side, and now his face was drawn and hollow. The muscles in his arms were strong from building the stone wall around Dixie's grave, but they were long and sinewy. He reckoned if anything happened and the coyotes got his body, they'd be awfully disappointed. He'd likely be as stringy as a spent gaming rooster. His salt and pepper hair had decidedly more salt than it had only 6 months before. Where he'd always kept it short, it now hung long and wild like a wind-blown mop when he took off his hat. He'd let his beard grow as shaggy as a buffalo bull. The darkness of it accented the deep circles under his eyes and the hollows in his gaunt cheeks. He went 4 days on the trail without anyone recognizing him, and he reveled in his anonymity. The cool fall weather and short daylight had prompted Stormy and Wolf to break out their winter coats, and they looked almost as unkempt as he. The closer Frank got to No Man's Land and Ephraim Swan, the more he realized he would need to make arrangements for another horse if he wanted to slip in unnoticed. It wasn't exactly a big secret that Frank Morgan rode a stout Appaloosa gelding and was always accompanied by a devoted cur dog. 20 miles south of Black Mesa, the unofficial landmark that designated the beginning of No Man's Land, was a rundown log trading post run by an old snaggletoothed outlaw named Bob Fitzsimmons. Everyone called him Three-Toed Bob. There were several stories floating across the plains as to how and why Bob had lost all but three of his toes. Some said it had to do with frostbite and a big blizzard back in the 50s. Others said he got himself captured by a band of Comanche down by the Red River, and they'd done the hacking before he managed to escape. From his experience with Comanche, Frank figured they would have cut off a lot more things more important than a man's toes. Some folks believed the toes had just rotted off because the old outlaw was so mean-spirited. Frank couldn't really argue with that theory because he'd seen Bob in action. They'd always gotten along well enough, though. And from what Frank had seen, Bob's mean streak only flared up when he was provoked, and never toward innocent women and children. The gunfighter shared that particular tendency himself. Bob had spent the last 5 years in the Nebraska State Prison, and according to all recent accounts, had decided to go more or less on the up and up, minding his own business at the trading post since his release. Low, gunmetal clouds boiled in a broad sky as Frank neared the log and canvas trading post. The smell of rain hung heavily in the air, and a cold wind kicked at the tufts of brown, wilted grass. The sky looked like it might open up at any moment, and Frank was glad to get somewhere out of the weather. He tied Stormy up to a low pine rail out front of the long, narrow building. Wolf hunted him a place under a stack of old crates that looked like it was made just for him. Three-Toed's place smelled like cheap whiskey and mildew. Old Bob himself stood behind the rough plank bar. Behind him was a small array of bottles, sacks of salt and flour, 2 double-barreled shotguns, and boxes of cartridges. The whole caboodle was stacked precariously on a set of flimsy wooden shelves held together with horseshoe nails, and it looked like one good sneeze from the retired outlaw might bring it down around his shoulders. As Frank walked up to the bar, he saw that Three-Toed had his long gray hair pulled back in a ponytail.
What do you have?
Whiskey.
The gunfighter made no attempt to disguise his voice, but didn't identify himself either. Bob would be a good test to see if Frank was as unrecognizable as he thought he was.
You're lucky you made it when you did. I believe this rain could turn to snow without too much trouble.
Frank shivered, despite the relative warmth put off by the pot-bellied stove at the end of the bar.
Got anything to eat?
Boiled meat and potatoes.
What kind of meat?
Like I said, boiled.
I reckon I'll just have another whiskey then.
I'm just joshing you, friend. It's mule deer dough. Good, too. I got a damn digger Indian works for me. He has to take a wagon far and wide just to keep me in firewood this time of year. He shot the doe just yesterday.
In that case, I'll take some. How you been getting along, Bob?
Three-Toed leaned over the bar to peer at Frank's face. He shook his head and combed a hand over his gray hair.
Am I supposed to know you from somewhere?
Well, I sure hope so. We spent a whole winter holed up together in the Absarica, back when you had all your toes.
Morgan? Is that you?
In the flesh.
Well, I'll be grassed.
Three-Toed poured himself a glass of the hard stuff he kept hidden behind the bar.
Ah, I heard you done crossed over. I swear, Morgan, you're all but wasted away. You look near dead now.
I nearly was. I don't have much fat to spare, so if you could hurry with that meat and potatoes, I'd be much obliged.
Coming right up.
Three-Toed disappeared behind a quilt partition and came out with a steaming bowl. Frank took a spoonful of the broth and meat. It was not Abby's mutton stew, but it was hot and savory enough to chase the chill away from his bones.
Swan's been telling everyone how he killed Frank Morgan and his wife.
Frank waved off the mention of Dixie.
She's dead, Bob. For a fact. What else is he saying?
He says he jumped you out north of Pueblo somewhere. He don't make no bones about the fact it was an ambush. But you know how folks are. They was beginning to believe all those books about you. Beginning to think you might be bulletproof.
What does he say about my wife?
You don't want to hear this, Morgan.
You're right. I don't want to. But I need to know for certain what happened. Tell it. Tell it all.
He cut her finger off. Tells everyone she was alive when he cut it off. Keeps it in a little cork bottle full of alcohol. He wears her wedding ring on a little leather string round his neck.
I need it all.
He said he liked to listen to her scream. If I'd have known you were still alive, I'd have killed him for you last time he was in here.
Frank pushed the bowl away. His appetite had vanished with the news of Dixie's suffering.
No, I'm glad you left it to me, Bob. This is something I need to take care of personally.
Swan and his men have taken over a little burg out east of here, about 75 miles away. They done run off or killed all the decent folk. I ain't never been there, but I hear it's mighty flat, just like here. Be awful hard to sneak up and take pot shots.
I don't intend to. This is something I need to do face to face.
I can give you rough directions from what I've heard people say, but I'm not exactly sure where it is.
I'll find it. In the meantime, I need to get my horse out of the rain. I'll pester you for a cup of coffee. Then if you got a place I can bed down for the night, I'd be much obliged.
I got a barn and a shed. Take your pick.
Barn sounds fine.
You know, Morgan, getting in, I don't reckon that'll be much of a problem. I just can't say you'll be able to get yourself out of there.
Well, Bob, I don't much give a damn whether I do or not.
Frank settled Stormy and his pack horse in the barn and threw two flakes of hay in a feed bunk. It was still chilly in the drafty barn, and steam rose from the backs of the wet horses as they began to munch their hay. It was raining in earnest now. Frank found a surprisingly dry spot by the stack of grass hay. He threw his saddle and kit there and rolled out his bedroll. Once he was certain nothing would get wet, he left Wolf to guard everything and went back inside for a cup of coffee.
Shut the damn door.
A pot-bellied rowdy sat at the bar. A taller, red-headed man about Frank's age stood beside him. They were drenched to the skin and drinking coffee as fast as Bob would bring it.
You're letting all the wind in.
My apologies.
Frank was surprised by the presence of the two men. They must have tied their horses around the side of the building.
You got a room to let?
You got a shed that don't leak too much. It's a damn sight better than a tent on the plains.
I don't aim to sleep in no tent on the plains. I don't fancy sleeping in no leaky shed either. What's the matter with your barn?
Occupied.
By who? That scarecrow? Why, he's so skinny I doubt he'd get wet if he stood out in the rain. Ain't that right, Scarecrow?
Like the man told you. The barn's occupied.
The whole damn barn?
Yep.
We're sleeping in the barn.
Listen, boys, I don't want any trouble. But I do want to be left alone.
I don't know who the hell you think you are. I'd have wring your scrawny neck, but it'd be too easy. I seen bed bugs bigger than you down in Fort Worth.
You got a gun there on your hip, Scarecrow. You know how to use it? Or you carry it around to keep yourself from blowing away?
I'd do all right. I think it'd be best if we'd let this drop.
How about if I just drop you?
Here now, I believe I've heard about enough of this.
Shut up. Mind your own damn business.
This is my place. What goes on here is all my business. You can calm down or clear out.
Just let them be, Bob. It's their funeral.
What's that supposed to mean?
Should I tell them who's getting ready to kill them?
I guess it won't hurt. They seem bound and determined to get killed. They wouldn't be able to tell anyone my little secret.
Well, I don't give a damn who you are, mister. I'm fixing to put a hole in you.
Boy, that'll be a feat if you pull it off. A passel of truly fast guns have tried to kill Frank Morgan before.
Frank Morgan?
So what if you are? You look like you got one foot in the grave already. All you need is a little nudge. Don't worry about him. He's a has-been. Probably all broke up and boo-hooing over his dead wife.
I think we ought to let this alone.
I ain't backing down from nobody. You know what, Morgan? I wish I would have been there when Swan went after you. I hear tell that wife of yours was a hell of a fighter.
You're stepping over the line, Jake.
She screamed and whimpered like a baby, they say. If I'd have been there, I would have showed her what a real man was like. I could have made her yell like a...
The bullet from Frank's Colt slammed into Red's belly before he knew Frank had even drawn. Chubby frowned and fumbled for his own pistol until a bullet pierced his chest. Both men slumped, then slid to the floor. Three-Toed gimped around the bar and pulled both men's guns out of their holsters so they didn't get any ideas before they died. Three-Toed gazed out the greasy window.
Well, hell, I ain't digging no damn holes in this rain.
I ain't dead.
Well, you will be shortly, and so are your foul-mouthed friend.
Bob limped over to stand above the red-headed gunman.
You'll likely be the one to go first, though. Bullet done tore up your gizzard. Your energy's leaking out all inside you. Seen it before, you won't last long.
You can go to hell, you crippled old fool.
Just for that, I think I'm gonna dump you in with the hogs out back. I got a boar out there as big as a damn buffalo. He'll finish you off in no time, bones and all. That way I won't have to dig no holes at all, rain or shine.
I need a doctor.
What you need is a miracle, boy. You're hit as hard as your fool partner.
Oh, don't throw me to no hogs. Please.
Why not? Hogs gotta eat too. He's done expired. Damn, I sure thought the other one'd go first.
It's tricky guessing at that sort of thing.
Oh, Lord, I hurt. I see angels. They're coming for me now. Oh, they're singing a beautiful song.
Them ain't angels. Them's hell's buggers coming to drag you off to your eternal reward.
Red's eyes were still open, looking for angels, but he was past hearing.
Come on, I'll help you drag the bodies outside. I guess they'll be sleeping in the shed after all.
Huh?
I killed them, but I don't fancy feeding anyone to the hogs.
I got a better idea. There's an old dry well out behind the shed. We can dump the carcasses down there. It's deep enough they won't smell.
All right, let's get the mean one first. I'm tired of looking at him.
Frank grabbed a boot, and Three-Toed did the same. The dead outlaw's arms trailed behind him as the two men dragged him toward the door.
You got a Bible around here, Bob?
I did. Oh, yeah. The leg broke off the stove, and I've been using it to prop the blasted thing up. I can't read a lick. At least now it's doing me some good. Why? You plan on saying some words over these scoundrels?
I might. Thought I could read them a little bit out of the Book of Judges. Don't know what good it'll do Red here, but it'd make me feel some better.
Mm-hmm. Later, Frank and Bob had some coffee with cake that Bob got out of a tin. He said he'd been saving it for a special occasion. It tasted like wood pulp, brandy, and raisins, but Frank choked it down anyway. Three Toads seemed to like it well enough and dabbed at his saucer to get at every last crumb.
You do a good business here.
Yeah, I reckon. It's awful lonely out here, but it beats riding the Hoot Owl Trail. That's a miserable life. Prison was bad, but it was a damn sight better than that. And want some more cake?
No, thanks. I had enough. Didn't you have a woman with you at that post you had up on the Platte?
Yep. Crow half-breed named Willow. Now that woman could cook a deer haunch. She weren't too much to look at, but she kept me warm in the winter, that's for certain. I reckon I know how you feel, Frank. I came home one day and found my place burnt to the ground with my wife inside it. Damn. Poor little Willow. She was ugly as a stump, but I ain't much to look at either. I did love that gal.
You find out who did it?
I found out, all right. Three whiskey peddlers wanted to put me out of business. They just killed Willa for meanness. I caught up to them about Medicine Bow. Took them in the middle of the night. Killed every mother's son of them. Cut the leader's cojones off. Made me a little medicine bag out of it. Hey, want to see it?
No, that's okay. I'll take your word for it.
Yeah. This revenge stuff is ticklish business, Morgan. It can eat you up. Take my word for it.
Maybe it already has, Bob. When you killed those whiskey peddlers, did it make you feel better?
Some. Leastways, I knew they wouldn't be able to slaughter any more innocents. Justice was served, I reckon.
That's all I'm looking for. Justice.
If anyone can meet that out to Ephraim Swan, it's you, Morgan. I just hope you live long enough to take some pleasure in it.
The next morning, Frank chose a rangy black from the two outlaw horses. It bore no brand, but where he was going, there wasn't anyone likely to check such things. Bills of sale belonged to the man with the fastest gun.
I take good care of Wolf and the horses, promise. Shoot straight, and give no quarter, because you'll get none from the likes of Swan and his gang.
Thanks for everything, Bob.
The black had a smooth gait and ate up ground with a vengeance. 2 days' ride from Three Toad's trading post took Frank to the edge of a set of scrubby flint hills that sheltered Swan's town. He figured he was roughly 20 miles from the Texas line.
Luke, if this works out, I may just come check up on your sorry hide.
The town was just how Frank had envisioned it. Ramshackle, tumble-down buildings all badly in need of repair. What had once been a thriving little community was now home to some of the most vicious killers on Earth. Sullen eyes under leaky wooden awnings were watching Frank approach, sizing him up as a dog might size up a bowl.
Watch all you want to, boys. You're apt to see a lot more of me in the next few days.
As long as no one recognized him, Frank felt relatively safe. He reined up the black in front of the largest building in town. It was a two-story affair of sun-bleached wood and peeling white paint. A crude, hand-painted sign hung above the awning. The Oxblood. Frank looped the black's reins over the hitch rail. A grinning man lounged under the awning, whittling on a short stick. A pile of shavings littered the cracked boardwalk at his feet. He'd been there a while.
Saloon or hotel?
Both. You don't mind bad whiskey and buggy beds.
You staying here?
Hell no. If you're smart, you'll stay at one of the abandoned shacks around town. Some of them have beds, some of them don't. If they ain't occupied, they're up for grabs. I'm flopping at that old green one up from the old church. You just stay away from that.
What? Your shack?
I meant the church. Swan turned it into his private headquarters. He don't take kindly to uninvited guests. I expect that shack on the other side of mine is empty. The fellow that was in it got himself shot this morning.
Much obliged.
Frank climbed back aboard the black and nodded to the man with the stick.
I'll go stow my gear and come back and get something to eat. If you're still here, I'll buy you a cup of coffee.
I'll be here. I got nowhere to go.
The dead outlaw shack proved to be comfortable enough. Anything of value had already been taken, presumably by whoever had done the killing. All that was left was an old saddle blanket and a half a Sears Roebuck catalog someone had been using for paper in the outhouse. A rope bed sagging in the corner was the room's only furniture, but the dead man did leave behind a couple of beeswax candles to ward off the darkness. Frank took the worn old Bible Three-Toed had given him out of his saddlebags. The black leather front cover, all of Genesis and most of Exodus, bore the deep imprint of the stove foot, but he could still read most of it. He tossed it and his blankets on the bed. The candles would come in handy later if he wanted to read a little about vengeance, righteous indignation, and such. Frank didn't have much. He'd left anything of value except his peacemaker and Winchester back at the trading post. The old outlaw had promised to sell everything and send the money to Dixie's girls. Frank had also scratched out a rough will, leaving the information about his sizable bank account so the girls would never want for anything should anything happen to him. After he stowed what little gear he had, Frank rode to the livery stable down the block from the Oxblood. A bent old man, smoking some noxious herb in a corncob pipe, took his horse.
Don't worry, mister. I promised to grain and water it well. I'll see the animal gets a good home if you don't happen to come back.
Don't worry, I'll be back.
You'd be surprised.
The man with the jackknife still whittled away at his stick on the front porch of the Oxblood when Frank slogged back through the mud from the livery.
You survived your first half hour in town. That's a good sign.
Some kind of record?
Frank stepped up on the boardwalk and scraped the mud off his boots. He pulled out his makings and rolled himself a smoke. When he was finished, he held out the papers and pouch to the other man.
Well, don't mind if I do.
The man folded his jackknife and stuck his whittling stick in the pocket of his gray wool vest. Once they'd both lit up, he held out his hand.
Johnny Nugget.
Joshua Bean.
He knew the other man's name was likely an alias as well.
This looks like a good place to lay low for a while.
As long as you keep spending money and don't get crossways with some of the hot-tempered sorts around here, Swan will let you hang around. If your money dries up, you're out on your ear. Or worse.
You got some short-fused ones around here, do you?
Hell yeah! We got Amos Crockett. He's the one that shot the man who was flopping in that shack you're in now. Fella must have looked at him wrong. Jim Nettles, he's the fastest gun in Wyoming. Bob Worth rode in a few days ago.
I heard of him. He's supposed to be as fast as Frank Morgan.
Ain't nobody as good as Frank Morgan was. It's a shame he's dead. Swan brags about it all the damn time.
You know Morgan?
No. Wish I had. He knew my... Well, never mind. What say I take you up on that cup of coffee?
You're on. I'm in the mood for a beefsteak.
I hope you got plenty of money. Food's higher than a cat's back around here. If you can afford it, they serve up pretty decent victuals. Cook appears to know what he's doing. Almost makes you forget he was sentenced to hang for poisoning a fellow with an apple pie.
Nugget unfolded himself from the wooden chair and stood up. He was a young man, not yet 30, with broad, muscular shoulders and powerful arms as big as some men's legs. For all his muscles, though, he didn't quite make it up to Frank's shoulder in height.
Go ahead and make a comment about it. It don't bother me.
What do you mean, Johnny?
In case you haven't noticed, I'm awful short.
Well, in case you haven't noticed, I'm awful old. I think we'll get along just fine.
Dixie's finger floated in a corked bottle on a shelf behind the bartender. Frank stumbled when he walked up to the bar and saw it. His stomach roiled. He clenched his jaw and fought to keep from vomiting. There was a familiar pounding in his ears, and he was carried instantly back to the day of the ambush. The smoky room seemed to close in around him.
You all right? You've gone white as a sheet.
That's Morgan's wife's finger.
Yeah. It tells you something about Swan, don't it?
Let's get us a table.
Frank turned his back to the bar. His stomach was rebelling again. Looking at the finger, he couldn't help but think of Dixie. If Swan had been in the room, he would have shot him right there and let the chips fall where they might. Once seated along the back wall, Frank was able to calm down some. He rolled another smoke and surveyed the crowd. He figured there were around 25 outlaws seated at various tables around the room. Four bar girls worked double duty tending to the rowdy crowd, enduring leers and comments, but amazingly enough, no groping. Swan must have certain rules about his working women. They likely didn't give out anything for free. Nugget inclined his head toward a motley group of four outlaws.
Boys at the bar sure enough giving you the once over. One of them's bound to try you. They check the sauce of every newcomer.
Oh, yeah. I'd hate to see the fella who tried you.
You see that fella with the bandaged flat nose spread all over his face, talking like he can't quite open his mouth? That's Tom Shively. He's the smart mouth bugger that decided he wanted a little lesson from me in fisticuffs.
And you gave him one.
Oh, yes, I did. Oh, no. You done grabbed Biggin's attention, and that ain't good. It's like a dog with a bone once his tiny brain grabs a hold of something. No, this ain't good at all.
Biggin?
That's all I ever heard anyone call him. Damn it. He's coming over here. Now, don't say nothing to rile him, Joshua. I seen him kill two men with his bare fists, and I only been here a week.
Frank turned to see nearly 7 feet of stinking red-faced outlaw lumbering his direction. If he ever wanted to get to Swan, he had to deal with these idiots who wanted to test him. Frank had been in his share of fistfights, and if he'd learned anything, he'd learned that if there was sure enough going to be a fight with a larger opponent, he'd better try and get in the first blow. As the giant made his way over to the table, Frank wondered if George Carlyle would ever forgive him for what he was about to do. But in a fight with someone as huge as this, the Marquis of Queensberry rules went straight out the window.
I'd hate to be your horse, you fat-ass son of a bitch.
I'm gonna rip off your arms and beat you to death with the stump.
The gunfighter feinted left, then ducked right behind the ogre, springing up behind him and hopping up on a chair. He grabbed the brim of the big man's hat with both hands and jerked down with all his might, yanking it down over the giant's ears and effectively blinding him. While Biggin struggled to pull up the tight hat so he could see again, Frank hit him twice as hard as he could in the unprotected kidneys. The man swayed on his feet. Taking advantage of his unsteadiness, Frank grabbed up a wooden chair and swung it across the back of the man's legs like an axe to a tree trunk. The huge outlaw fell with a resounding thud, knocking over two tables and spilling whiskey as he went down. The hat was still pulled tight over his forehead and eyes, and his ears stuck absurdly out to each side of a broad face. Without waiting for his opponent to recover, Frank reared back and kicked the downed man square in the side of his head. Spittle and blood flew through the air. Bits of teeth clattered against the far wall. The big man twitched, and Frank kicked again. Biggin lay still. Bloody drool oozed from his half-open mouth. His Goliath down, Frank bent over and rested his hands on his knees. Even though he'd never even been hit, he could tell the fight had taken a lot out of him.
Well, I'll be damned. Never thought I'd see that big bastard bested in a fight.
I wouldn't want to be you when he wakes up. He'll kill you first chance he gets.
I doubt he'll be able to see straight for a couple of weeks.
Frank readjusted his own hat and sat back down at the table across from Johnny Nugget. A wilted little blonde with a gold front tooth brought two beers and set them on the table in front of Frank and Nugget. She was skinny as a picket rail and looked no older than 17 or 18.
On the house, boys. We all enjoyed the show. Besides, I was the unlucky girl who drew the short straw tonight, and I had me an appointment with that big galoot later. Mister, you saved me a hell of a lot of trouble and grief.
Frank counted out a handful of coins and gave them to the girl as a tip.
You did good, Bean. Biggin's gonna kill you when he wakes up.
I don't think so.
Why? What do you plan to do, shoot him?
If I have to.
Biggin don't even carry a gun. You'd be able to claim self-defense anywhere else, but the folks in this town have their own special set of rules. They'd hang you for sure if you shot an unarmed man, even one as big as Biggin.
You know what that hat did besides make it so that the big son of a bitch couldn't see me?
What?
Kept his eyes from popping out of his thick skull. I kicked a man like that once before, sent one of his eyeballs flying across the room, just like Biggin's teeth. Believe me, Johnny, when he wakes up, I don't think he'll be seeing much of anything, including me.
Bean, are you as bad as you think you are?
Better, by a damn sight.
Biggin finally sputtered back to consciousness 20 minutes and 6 pitchers of cold water later. He struggled to his feet with the help of 3 friends. It took 2 more to keep him from falling over and help drag him out the door. Frank tried not to smile. No, Biggin wasn't going to be much of a problem. He wouldn't have time. Just getting over a kick to the head was a full-time job. Frank and Nugget both ordered steaks and sat for a time, enjoying being left alone. There was a different sort of notoriety that came with beating the giant, and though the rest of the bar had stayed away from him, if he wasn't the talk of the place when he was a newcomer, he was now. Every eye in the bar turned to him every few minutes, studying, probing, sizing him up, and trying to figure out how they would beat him. A murmur of angry voices began to grow among a group of outlaws at the bar. Frank cut his steak and savored the bite of meat. It was a little tough, but it was a change of pace from mutton stew. The group became more animated. It was only a matter of time before someone tested him with something more deadly than Biggin's fists. The test came before he finished his supper.
You ain't Joshua Bean!
The shout came from a man at the bar. He was red-faced, and the veins on the side of his neck throbbed as he spoke.
I know who you are. You're Jim Crawford. I figured it out. You're the lousy bastard who killed my cousin up in Oglala.
Now hold on a second, mister. I'm not Jim Crawford. You don't want to be shot by somebody you don't even know.
You're a liar. You was hired by the Circle T to kill homestanders. One of the men you killed was my cousin.
I'm gonna tell you one last time. I'm not Jim Crawford, and I don't hire out my gun.
The screaming challenger had good intentions when it came to avenging the death of his cousin, but he proved to be no fast hand with a gun. He clawed at his holster, missing the pistol altogether as Morgan's bullet tore into his belly and knocked him up against the bar. When he finally managed to jerk the gun to clear leather, it slipped from his fingers and clattered to the floor.
You shot me, damn you. I can't believe I let a skinny-ass old man like you shoot me.
You were the one that wanted to fight. I told you you were making a mistake.
The outlaw's boots slid out from under him, and he sat down hard on the floor.
That old boy's about as fast as I've ever seen.
Yeah, I seen Smoke Jensen work one time. This fella's faster than him.
He's fast. But Frank Morgan could have taken him.
Ain't nobody as fast as Frank Morgan. I seen him once down in Del Rio. He killed 9 armed men in a single gunfight. Damnedest thing you ever did see.
Frank grinned to himself. 9 men, huh? That would be a damned fine thing to see, since he'd never set foot in Del Rio. This being dead was doing more to build his reputation than the dime novels.
Somebody help me!
You're done for, Hal. Just do the right thing and go ahead and expire.
I ain't done in yet. I ain't gonna do any such thing as expire.
Wanna bet on that?
Can I have your saddle? I always been partial to that saddle, you know that.
You go to hell.
Well, you don't have to get all in a huffing fit about it. I'll just wait till you're dead and take it then. Gosh. Try to be decent for once, and what does it get me?
I need me a doctor!
You need a box.
The bartender took out a gleaming bowie knife. He had a wild look in his eye, and Frank could only guess what he was hiding out for.
You want us to operate?
Just go on and let the man die in peace.
The bartender looked over his shoulder and returned the long knife to his belt.
Take him outside and let him do his dying out there.
I'm ready to finish my steak. How about you?
I could eat.
Nugget shook his head.
Joshua, you're an interesting sort to hang around.
An attractive little brunette with a sunburned face and an easy smile brought 2 cups of coffee.
Well,
Thank you, Velda.
Nugget smiled up at the woman. She returned his look with a playful wink. It was obvious these two had a little thing going.
Your friend here's pretty good with a gun. My friend Suzette says she'd surely like to get her hands on you. You saved her from a night with Biggin, and she's eternally grateful. Biggin's done paid, so she'd let it be his treat.
I'm flattered. But I've had a mighty rough go of it lately when it comes to women folk.
Suzette's just what the doctor ordered then. She's got sweet shoulders to cry on if that's what you need. And the other parts of her ain't too shabby either.
Pretty, wilted little Suzette stood with her back to the bar, leaning against her hands and smiling hungrily in Frank's direction. She looked so young, like one of Dixie's daughters, that it turned his stomach.
Tell her thanks, but I'm gonna have to pass this time.
Velda looked back over her shoulder and shook her head. Suzette slumped for a minute, then turned her attention to another cowboy at the bar.
Some more beer for us, Velda.
Velda sauntered off to tend them, giving Johnny one last playful wink.
That woman's stare could hypnotize a grizzly.
And that ain't the half of it.
I need some air.
You're bleeding, Joshua.
Nugget nodded downward. Frank looked at his side. A small spot of blood dotted his shirt halfway between his armpit and his belt on the right side, his gun side. He shrugged, more aware of the pain than he had been.
Likely I got some of Biggin's or Hal's blood on me.
Let's go for some of that air.
Once outside, the men rolled smokes, and Nugget dragged up another chair so they could both sit down.
You want to tell me about it, Bean? You're hurt. They might not be able to see it in there, but I can.
I'm all right enough.
Listen to me. I don't care how fast you are. In case you didn't notice it, those hombres in there are animals. If they smell blood or catch a whiff of weakness, they'll turn into a pack of wolves and rip you to pieces, believe me.
I hear you. All right. I got scraped up a little a while back, and I'm not completely healed.
I figured it was something like that. Scrape with the law?
No. Had to do with the woman trouble I was talking about.
I see.
Mind if I ask you something?
Shoot.
What did you do to end up in this place? You just don't seem to fit in with the rest of these outlaws.
Killed a man back down in Dimmitt. It was him or me, but he was friends with the sheriff, so I had to light out for somewhere to hide.
Just happened?
Not too long ago. Does it matter?
Guess not. It just seems odd a man with one killing under his belt would come to a place this bad to hide out.
Well, I don't know. A man does what he thinks is best. You came here.
What if I told you my scrape was with the law?
Your business.
What if I told you I killed three young deputies who tried to arrest me? Men with families, just out doing their jobs.
Nugget looked up, eyes blazing under the wide brim of his hat. He started to speak, but Frank raised his hand.
Your secret's safe with me, Nugget.
And just what secret is that, Mr. Bean?
No outlaw worth his salt would give a prairie dog scruffy behind if I killed a half dozen lawmen. I can see it in your eyes. It's eating you up inside that you made friends with me.
Hell, Bean. More than half the fools here have murdered lawmen. I can't get too particular about who I partner up with.
You said murdered, not killed. Sounds like it really bothers you.
I've seen you shoot. I know I can't beat you, Bean. Where do we go from here?
Nowhere, Johnny. I reckon I'm here for the same reason you are. All I want you to do is stay out of my way.
So you didn't kill three deputies?
Not even one.
How'd you know I was a badge toter?
I didn't live this long by being wrong very often about my hunches. I can generally tell who to trust.
Well, sir, you called it right this time. Tyler Beaumont, Texas Rangers Company F.
Frontier Company. I used to know a ranger who was a fair hand with a gun. He was assigned to Company F, and not too damn tall now that I think of it. Had fists like 12-pound sledgehammers. You might know him, by the name of Sherman Beaumont.
My father.
Thought there was a resemblance.
You knew my father? Can I ask your real name?
Sure. It's Morgan.
Frank Morgan. Makes all the sense in the world now. My father used to talk about you all the time. Said you were the fastest, steadiest man he'd ever laid eyes on. I heard him say once that the Rangers were lucky you landed on the right side of the law, because it would have taken a whole company to bring you in if you decided to go outlaw.
How is old Sherman?
He passed over 2 years ago. Tangled with a sick coyote one night in camp. Hydrophobia took him. Awful thing. Just watching him drove my mother mad herself. She just quit eating after he died and wasted away. To tell you the truth, that's why I volunteered for this mission.
Sorry to hear about that. Sherman Beaumont was one of the finest men I ever met, and a credit to your creed. He wasn't quite the fastest, but he was the most accurate shot I've ever seen, with a pistol or long gun.
He was good.
I watched him part the hair of an old Mexican who was trying to steal one of our mules. Poor old fella just wanted it to feed his family. Didn't mean us any harm. We could ill afford to lose any stock, though, so your papa, he fired off what we thought was a warning shot. He was too kind-hearted to try and kill the starving Mexican, you see. Well, the poor fella was stopped about 200 yards from where we was making water. When your pa shot, the old man just fell over like he'd been pole-axed, and the mule came trotting back to us. When we went to check on the body, we saw your daddy had creased him right good down the center of his hair. Grazed him good. Made him think twice about stealing Ranger stock. Sherman ended up giving him a whole poke full of food. Most of what we had, really.
That was my pa. Thanks for the story, Morgan. I heard about what Swan did to you and your wife. I'm sorry.
And we all got our crosses to bear. You said you volunteered for some kind of mission?
In a couple of days, more than 36 Texas Rangers are going to ride down on this town and drive all these vermin back to hell where they belong.
Whatever happened to one riot, one ranger?
In case you haven't noticed, partner, there's generally a riot on every corner in this no-count little burg. Hell, you caused two and you only been here, what, half a day?
Listen to me good. I don't care if you kill every soul in this town. But remember one thing. Swan is mine.
Why not let the law handle this, Frank? Better yet, why don't you let me deputize you and you can ride with us?
Can't do that, Tyler. What I have in mind for Mr. Swan has nothing to do with the law.